Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July the 20th, 1999, and in fireside room this morning is Pete Goddard. Session called Damaged Children, What Do We Do With Them? Number 99-2. Let's listen in.
It's going to be very different from you, those of you that are parents. And please keep that in your mind at all times, because my experience is going to be different from yours. And I have not had the experience of having my own child. I have had the experience of parenting children at times. And I have offers of children at work and sometimes at church. And dear friends of mine that... when they asked me to be the godfather for their son, I asked them, well, you know, what are my responsibilities? And I said, well, the typical stuff, you know, remember him on his birthday and holidays and this kind of stuff. And when he turns 13, he lives with you. And then when he becomes human again, you send him back. And I said, okay, just want to be clear as far as what my role is. Well, and I've been like, you know, house parenting group homes and different, you know, stuff like that, but it is still not the same as being a parent. Okay? And so I may understand here, in my head, but in my heart, no. Not to the degree that you do as parents. And so that, kind of keep that in mind as we're going through this. To kind of catch you up a little bit, these hieroglyphics down here at the bottom is what we did, we're working on yesterday as far as looking at what are some of the roots. This tree here, and to get like a nice big tree like that with a big trunk, it's have a lot of roots. And these are all the roots that we came up with yesterday that are influencing this tree. And so if we want to keep this metaphor of the tree, today we're going to look at the fruits of this tree. What have the roots been feeding to this tree? And how did it get to be this way? And what does this tree look like as far as in looking at children today? And how diverse is it? And what are these different influences here as far as the roots go? I'm just going to kind of go through them quickly for those of you who weren't here yesterday and kind of go through this. And as I was looking at it, I was like, wow, you know, there's a lot more family related type of roots or influences on this tree than there are the church and spiritual or the societal roots. I don't know what that says, but I'm just, you know, it's like, whoa, you know, a lot more. And so we may kind of get to that in a bit. So let's look at some of the societal roots here. In case you can't read my neat printing up here, mass communication was one of them, the media, the political, religious type of freedom. The starting of this country here, independence, self-reliance. You know, we talk about today, you know, how everyone is, you know, kind of self, not completely self-centered, but, you know, me kind of stuff. This has been our heritage for a long time. Money type of opportunities that are available to us. The melting pot as far as culturally what's going on, potential for tolerance, diversity, loyalty to family and ideals, the Puritan ethic, if you work hard, get ahead, all that kind of stuff, urbanized culture. The labor force came from the family originally, and that has been a change. Self-sufficient, cultural dehumanizing some cultures. We talked about how once, you know, my family, the Germans came to this country, it was like, you know, or other nations that, you know, people were came here and how they were exploited. You know, African Americans, you know, Irish, the Native Americans that were already here. I mean, it's like, you know, you kind of like, you know, just completely eliminate them. What was the book I was reading? Oh, Undaunted Courage, about Meriwether Lewis, with Lewis and Clark. And their whole philosophy as far as in dealing with the Indian problem, as it was called, and was to like, okay, well, you get them, you know, in this nice place over here, and you convince them that their father, who was George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, excuse me. Yeah, Thomas Jefferson, who was your father in Washington, who was looking out for your best interest. Now move off these lands you've been living on for centuries and go to this little land over here where you can't grow or anything or there's no animals, but you know, that's in your best interest. Come on now. Free land, ah, yes, come over here. So then we come to the church and spiritual types of influences. Used to be more clear cut, right and wrong, black and white. Not so much so now. Restrictive as far as what is allowed at times. Different religious exclusivity. Was that? That's not ringing a bell. Okay, I'm going to have to come back to that.
I think that was the Norwegians with their church. The different ethnic groups.
There you go. Yes, yeah. So if I was Lutheran, I would go to a German Lutheran church, not a Norwegian Lutheran church kind of stuff. Okay. The extended family, basis for the church, again, was a basis for schools, hospitals, orphanages, social services, nursing homes, provided somewhat of a safety net for families. Social activities. You know, we're talking about, you know, back before there were all the civic types of organizations. Church was where it went for. Rules for family structure and rituals. And then center of family life. Now, get over to the family types of influences. As far as what's influencing this tree here. Changing the role of primary caregiver. Education, divorce, single parent families, two income families, extended workday, latchkey kids, parents who let kids raise themselves, daycare options, more activities outside the home, bigger spread between the haves and the have-nots, changing values, changing model of the family from the nuclear family to an extended family, loss of family mealtime, changing role models for youth and adults, non-traditional families, gay, lesbian, multicultural, grandparents raising kids, experiencing too much too soon. Talked about how, like, you know, like the little ones being in, you know, sports activities with all-star teams and playoffs. And someone has mentioned, where was it?
Norway.
In Norway, what, you don't keep score until they're how old?
12.
I like that. I like it. Yeah. Okay. The media influence, what that has to go on, definition of what happiness is. You know, people are saying, you know, I just want to be happy. I want my family to be happy. What is happiness and at what expense? Parentified adults. Money is more important than children. Kids here to meet parents' needs. Okay. Any comments or anything on that at this point?
What's a parentified adult?
Parentified adult. Everyone want to give it a shot?
What did he say?
Parentified adult. Basically, I mean, a parentified adult would, if I'm, let's say, 12 years old and my parents are separated at the time, and I've got younger siblings, and so now as the oldest, it becomes my job to step in and do many things that I'm not really prepared to do emotionally, such as maybe prepare breakfast, or when the kids get home from school, it's my job to keep an eye on them, to keep the house clean, to prepare supper, to do a whole host of things, but mostly it's for me as a 12-year-old or whatever age it might be, taking on roles that I'm not prepared for. And in some instances, I may do a really good job of it, or at least it looks like way on the outside. But on the inside, it can become very overwhelming and be way too much for kids to deal with emotionally. Okay? All right, so, let's see. Let's start looking at then as far as what these roots, what are the fruits that we see up here? What are the results of this stuff down here that we're seeing at the bottom? What are the results of that? as far as that we're seeing in kids today?
We're seeing kids being very violent because of the violence in the media and the violence throughout our society.
All right, you're saying some of that's coming from the media?
Some of it's coming from the media.
Okay. All right.
A lot of the violence in teenagers is coming from the use of drugs.
All right. Where else do you see the violence, an increase in violence coming from?
Lack of values.
Like which ones? Which values? I mean,
right and wrong, Christian values.
The devaluation of life. They don't have
insensitivity.
Okay. Does that kind of get?
Yes. Yes. Maybe unsupervised access to guns.
I think a lot of our sports encourage violence.
Okay, say some more about that.
Well, I think hockey, I just personally think hockey and football, wrestling, and some of that can be very, it's hard for children to discern the difference between that playtime and violence. And it encourages aggressiveness and competitiveness and getting ahead at all costs.
Anybody see the other side of that? Yes.
Well, I was just going to say, in video games and computer games, you see a lot of it where the ultimate solution is to waste the thing.
Yeah, I think the other side of the sports issue also is that it provides an avenue for
release of that energy and so forth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you need the parental, or you need a parent or some kind of an adult to teach that child that that's a good way to let go of your aggression and you don't take it off the field.
That's the key. Because what we're seeing is that it's not the media that's causing the increased violence. It's children observing a lot of violence in the media without any adult around to talk to them about it. So you might be interested in a copy, maybe one copy, two copies of an article about the media and how it's not necessarily, we're not going to get rid of the media and the violence on the media and media. What can help, though, significantly, is by you being with children as they're exposed to it, as opposed to, like we were saying yesterday, the typical kindergartner goes to school, to kindergarten, more hours of TV time than he'll ever get in classroom instruction in college before kindergarten. So there's ways of being able to deal with that, but you're right. It's, you know, not it's the lack of the parents. So let's put that up here then somehow, as far as like, say some more of what you're saying about, you know, the parents.
I think they need a parent or an adult there to teach them that there are positive ways to release their aggression and negative ways to release it.
Let's see what you think about this. Lack of parental or adult contact. Now, but I don't mean that necessarily that they're not around adults, but around
engaged.
What?
They're not engaged.
Yes. And so what happens then?
Whatever they're doing becomes their reality, whether it's a video game.
Yeah.
It's not reality.
Yes.
You kill somebody on the video game, they'll come back and you'll fight them again.
Right. what they're finding out with the video games is that, you know, which are the ones that really draw the kids in? The bloody, I mean, you know, the bloody, the violent ones. Do you know why? It's the stimulation kind of stuff, you know, the visual kind of stuff. And what happens is that as you get more and more of that stimulation, to get that kind of excitement, you need, your threshold goes up, so you need more. And so, you know, it becomes more and more violent.
The children become more desensitized, right?
Right.
To pain and all of that, and so they want more and more and more to feel it.
Yes. And how often is a parent there with them playing one of these video games? No. You know? It's like, so yeah, they become desensitized to it. Very much so. You know, you look at, where is this? The number of kids being killed by handguns and all. In here, the state of Washington, every 5 days, someone under the age of 18 is killed by a handgun. North Carolina, where I just moved from, every 2 days. Every two, it's like, New Hampshire, where, let's see, how's the population? New Hampshire, which has, my gosh, compared to Washington, has a fifth. They have every 37 days a kid is killed by a handgun. Massachusetts, which has a population almost exactly to Washington, every 9 days a kid is killed by a handgun. I looked and I couldn't find statistics for Canada. You know, how available are handguns in Canada?
They're not.
I wonder how much of a difference that would make. I would imagine a lot. Minnesota, again, has a population almost identical to Washington, and every 7 days, someone under the age of 18 is killed by a handgun. Okay. All right. Where else are we? I'm sorry.
My thought was, yes. And I don't know how it fits in with games. I mean, for the kids during games because there's something missing in the family or what? Mm-hmm. It often contributes to violence.
All right. So, what kind of roots are feeding kids being involved in gangs?
Lack of family. They need a place where they feel they belong.
Absence.
Yeah.
And love and of some sort.
Okay.
Acceptance.
Sense of belonging.
What?
Acceptance.
Acceptance.
And power.
Ah.
Because they're frustrated.
Yeah. And why are they frustrated?
Because they're not the adults. They're not the ones in charge of their lives. They're teenagers. That's just a rough period to go through.
And as adults, when we deal with a teenager who's out of control, what do we tend to do?
Treat like a kid.
I said to sit down, just like, you know, we try to make ourselves bigger. And it's like, you know, that somehow we've got the control, and we don't. At least not as much as we think we do sometimes.
Yeah.
So there's some of the things that we do that definitely frustrate children more.
Yeah.
Okay. What else has contributed to the gang activity from this stuff up here that you're seeing?
I come from Yakima Valley, and we're having a difficult time with the gangs and with the shootings, and probably every week there's at least two or three gun type of things, some murders, some just drive-by shootings, and it's becoming very difficult. And my husband was on a community relations board at the high school, and we had Hispanics there also giving their opinion on this gang type of bit. And I just want to make this comment that depending on what the parental thinking is on gangs, in quotes, this Hispanic man told my husband that gangs are nothing different than your Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, and your, you know, because it's an activity, they belong in it, they have a caring group. So your parental thinking from maybe another culture, that may not be our culture that we're thinking of it, and maybe just this one man's opinion, but it was an eye-opener to us to realize that there's a different way of thinking about gangs from a different culture.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't heard that one. Thanks.
Oh, I've heard that, and I think it's important to know that there's different types of gangs. There's violent gangs, and there's gangs that are, you know, kind of like just kids that want to get together, hang out, and be cool, and kind of act like they're violent, but they're really not.
Yeah.
And I think there is a lot of similarity with Cub Scouts and so forth with different cultures.
Okay.
So the possibility of the gang activity can be a plus or a minus.
Okay. All right. What other kind of fruits are you seeing?
How can the gang thing be a plus if there's no adult?
Well, usually isn't. I mean, in a lot of gangs, there's a person who takes on the role of a kind of the leader. And if you have a positive leader, then, you know, maybe they'll get the kids doing something positive. Whereas if in the negative, you know, more violent types of gangs, then you probably have a very violent or very
we all had cliques,
that leader,
you know, cliques when we were in school. And some of those cliques serve the same purpose that I think some of these gangs are doing today.
You're not sure about that, though. Okay.
I would disagree, but that's mine.
But I think the key word is purpose. That if the purpose is fellowship and a sense of power, that maybe we got it when we were part of a clique that went out and toilet papered people's houses, and they're getting it from something else. I agree with you that what they're doing is wrong in many of these gangs, but the purpose of the gang, the purpose of being a group, might be the same.
All right, so you're still seeing this strong need in teenagers of feeling a sense of belonging.
Absolutely. I think it's a way to fit into society beyond your family. And I agree with the person that says that it can be positive. My 30-some-year-old daughter, who's unmarried, refers to her friends as the gang.
Oh, I think it's that name that has a negative connotation.
Ah, okay.
And whenever people hear that, they think of, you know, shooting and, you know, violent things. So that name carries along with it.
Okay. All right. All right. What else? What other kind of fruits are you seeing?
It's hard to put into words, but children's eyes are much more wide open than mine were. And my 4-year-old knows much more about the world than I probably did until I was 12 years old, or even older. They're
global awareness or something like that.
Understanding.
And do you see that as generally a positive or a negative?
Yes.
Okay.
Early maturity.
Sophistication.
Exposure.
Indefinite exposure.
There's earlier sexual experimentation going on. Earlier than we'd ever thought of. Darn.
But part of that is fed by the fact that healthier children often experience puberty earlier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
Earlier sexual activity than when? I mean, that's something that's always been around.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's like, what, our great-grandparents, some of them were married at age, you know, 14 or so?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, so the marriage age has gone higher. People are marrying later. But are they being more sexually active earlier?
You didn't hear about it in the media back then.
Right.
Or when I was a kid.
Of course not.
And now the pregnant youth are kept in school instead of being sent away.
And even have sometimes specifically schools for single parents. Yeah.
We were discussing this a little bit earlier, as I mentioned before, we're raising our children in Norway, and we immigrated in 1996, right before our children became school age there. And they now start first grade when they're six. It used to be seven. And my son went off this historic first grade class, and I was just shaking my head. I thought, this is a joke. They're not, these kids, they don't know how to read yet. They don't learn to read in the first grade there. The only thing that they do is the alphabet and learn to count to 10. This is just, and the teacher explained to me, the only purpose of this year is to make the children feel safe and build relationships and comfortable in their environment. And it is important. And but why do you wait so long to start to learn to read? This Norwegian girlfriend of mine, she's a teacher, and she said, I think the big difference is that we really want to preserve our children's childhoods as long as possible, because they grow up so fast, we really want them to be children as long as possible.
Ah.
And I really hadn't thought about that before, but it's true, and it really is important that they try to preserve that innocence as long as possible.
Okay, so with these eyes open early, what, growing up too soon sometimes? But also then, what, trying to keep them still as kids? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
We do that in a way in this country. Often when our children become teenagers, we say, we don't want them to work. They'll have to work the rest of their lives. They might as well play the summers. And so the emphasis that many of us had on being self-reliant as far as generating our own pocket money, for example, or earning money for college, you see many families where the parents prefer to finance those things and let the kids go to camp, say, for the summer.
But I see a big difference there because, and that came like, I think from this attitude from the generation before that, oh, my kid's not going to have to work as hard as I did. And there are parents that pay off their kids with their own bad conscience. They're off working all day and give their children material things all the time to deal with their own bad conscience of not being there. And that, I think, produces children that have no sense of the effort or appreciation. There's an expectation that I've got to have the latest this or the latest that.
One of the things with kids that really irritate me at times is a feeling of entitlement. You know? You owe me this.
That's not just kids. They learn that.
These roots, they come from somewhere. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really, that should be a family influence, because that is pervasive in a huge portion of our culture.
It's not just family, though. It's societal, too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
What does that mean? I'm not dismissive that it's family, too.
No.
Feeling of entitlement, yeah. What else are you seeing of the roots? I mean, the fruits that you're seeing.
I see not making anybody responsible for their own behavior. We take that away from them in so many ways.
Okay.
I know at school we're not allowed to keep a student in at recess for behavior. I'm not saying for work or anything. I mean, we're don't for work either, but we can't keep them after school. There is so little you can do. You can't, I'm not in a regular classroom, so I mean, it's not mine, but you can't hold them back if they aren't producing. And maybe that would be really in the best interest of that student, but socially that would be hard for them, so we pass them on.
Okay.
I don't think that's the reason kids are not held back, though.
That's what, I mean, we'll have teachers that suggest holding a kid back, and the parents absolutely will never. It just is rarely done in our school district, and we have 75,000 students, so I mean, that's a big pool to look at.
Yeah.
But that's a case where neither the child nor the parent is being required to take responsibility.
Right, that's what I'm saying. We're not taking, nobody takes responsibility. Yeah. We get burned by coffee from McDonald's. We blame McDonald's rather than the fact that the cup was hot. We knew that, and we're the ones that spilled it. We want somebody else to be responsible and take the blame for whatever, always, and not take any of that responsibility on ourselves. And that we do as adults, and then and that follows through to children.
Okay.
We're all the fruits.
All right. What are the fruits do you see in children today?
I saw these negatives, but I think they're
positive. Exactly what I said. Very good. Yes. Thank you.
I think children today are, I mean, no offense to the older generation, are a little wiser. You know? I think that they're, I mean, part of this growing up earlier, there's benefits to this. I mean, you understand the world better. You understand what's going on around you better than people the older generation may have, because we are the mass media. Not only does it give us bad things, it also gives us good things. Mm-hmm. We got more aware of the greater world around us.
And you can learn a lot from TV.
Yeah.
I think there's children's play channels, nature channels, there's all sorts of stuff out there. Yeah. That's what you want to do.
Yeah, just so that the shift has been that more of the learning is taking from the feed me visual, as opposed to an adult saying, let's go walk up to Heart Lake and see what we see. The difference being sitting and watching a video of someone taking a hike to Heart Lake is that it doesn't require any effort on my part. It's all fed to me.
But it can make you want to go see those places.
Not necessarily.
But it can.
Right. As opposed, but comparing that to you, like you taking a child up to Heart Lake, my gosh. Because one of the things, one of the fruits up here that's happened from a lot of this is the lack of the relationship with significant others. Not just parents. Towards the end, I'm going to hand out to you what has been developed here from the Search Institute from Minneapolis. Yeah. 40 developmental assets we're talking about as far as what children need. And over again, it's not just a relationship with parents. It's with other significant adults that make the difference in a child's life. And so by taking them on that hike, what you do is you provide that opportunity of that interaction going on. And it's just a marvelous type of thing. I mean, it was like, you know, with Cameron's oldest son, you know, Joel, who went up to Heart Lake, and on the way back, it was like he was talking about developing Heart Lake into a town. And we covered every aspect on the way back of what it would include and why we would not have certain things and why you wouldn't need a police force, because everyone was going to behave up there. Okay? And, you know, it was just phenomenal, you know, being able to do that as opposed to, you know, putting someone in front of a video and watching it. Yeah.
And another good thing, I think kids know that they need that they need a significant person. I mean, they're searching for that, and I think that's where the gang and that whole thing comes from. I get to school by 6:30 in the morning, and I have kids standing outside my door that aren't even my students that want an adult to talk to. And everybody's either still asleep at home or they've gone to work, and so they come to school and come to my classroom. And then I'm there late in the evening, and the same thing, it may be different kids.
Yeah.
But those kids want somebody to bounce ideas off of, to talk to just even be in the room with while they're reading a book.
It's, yeah.
So kids naturally want that.
Yes, they want us. Mm-hmm. They want part of us.
And that's a good, that's very definitely a good thing. It's just that we need to,
yeah,
to be able to provide it.
There was a school where I used to be a school counselor. Being new, they usually assign new people to the jobs no one else wants. And so they assigned me to have the kids first thing in the morning, the ones that got there early. Parents would just drop them off, kind of stuff. And this is an elementary school. And they'd send them all to the gym. And the teachers all used to stand up on the stage you know, one or two teachers with a whistle. Sit down, you know, and they'd yell at the kids from up on the stage, and they hated doing this, and the kids hated it. And so they'd get all riled up and everything, they'd settle them down, you know, back and forth kind of stuff. So they gave the job to me, okay? And I'm like, you know, and I, at that time, I'd been, you know, out of grad school for about 10 years or so, and I was like, this is stupid. I was like, this is not how you work with children. I was like, you know, I got off the stage, and I'm down there sitting on the floor, and I'd read to the kids, and we'd kind of play like quiet games or whatever. And the teachers are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm playing. And I'm not allowed, you know? And there was no behavior problems. Because the kids were getting what they needed. You know, that kind of contact. And then you'd get the regulars, the kids that would come up and kind of like, you know, need to sit on your lap, or they'd lean on you. You know, because they want that physical contact with you. And it was like, you know, yeah. All right.
A lot of people say, how could this have happened in Littleton with good parents and good families? You know, how could these kids go bad? And I always say, if there's a big difference between being a good person and being a good parent, and I think being a good parent is time. It's all about time. It's all about giving your children time. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything special.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Being able to relate one-on-one with someone. Finding a way of being able to make a connection with someone. Yeah.
One positive thing about children today that I think is wonderful and much better than when I was a child anyway is there, in general, a much greater awareness of being good stewards of the earth. And kids today are much more aware of how to recycle and how to just preserving nature, I think, than my generation was.
And their bodies, too. You know,
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's not smoke, let's not use alcohol.
Yeah.
That's so different than our education when we were in elementary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also see the opportunity up here for creativity. Mm-hmm. And in ways that, you know, like are mind-boggling sometimes. And I see, you know, at times, of, again, what's going on within the families that it promotes being able to think sometimes for themselves, as opposed to somewhere here about being restrictive and everything being dictated for you, that you have to think for yourself sometimes. But I think there's some creativity that goes on also.
And kids are more open to question things than they were, I mean, when I was growing up, I think. I know I questioned a lot, but that's just the
Okay.
That's really true. Some of us have talked recently about what things were like when we were in school. Girls only took home ec, boys only took shop. If you questioned teachers, if the teacher said something wrong and you asked for verification, you might be sent to the office because that was being impertinent. So there is
you just more told me to look it up. Mm-hmm. The answer we got was look it up. We'll find out.
Okay. Yeah.
One of the things that always puzzles me today is the, you know, the self-esteem issue, where you can't really talk to a kid or criticize because you'll hurt their self-esteem. And so a lot of kids end up in going out in the real world having never been criticized, and they find a whole different world.
Yeah. Whoever made up this idea that you can't criticize kids because it hurts their self-esteem is full of it.
Well, even the self-esteem programs, and we get tons of those coming to our school to build a kid's self-esteem. You build a kid's self-esteem by teaching them to read and them feeling good that they're reading or whatever they're doing. You can't keep telling a kid he's wonderful when he knows he's not doing whatever that he else is and have a good self-esteem. It just doesn't happen. And we have reward program where we do all kinds of things for kids out on the playground when they're doing what they're supposed to. And I really have a difficult time with that because that's an expectation. And I, you know, nobody pats me on the back for driving the speed limit. They do talk to me when I drive more than I think we're really preparing the kids for reality of life because a boss isn't going to just give you those little perks because they don't want to hurt your feelings.
Right.
You either do the job or you're out of there.
Right.
And all these little reward programs, just we have one that we do for kids, the ones that don't normally follow the rules, so they get little perks that the kids that follow the rules don't get anything. And that's like, hello, what are we doing here? You know, let's start out being a bad kid so that, you know, the next 6 years we get all these perk things coming along. It's just craziness.
The ways?
And it's a self-esteem program.
Yeah.
Actually, a company that I worked for, they had a similar program. And what they did was if you did anything that was a safety violation and they caught you, they would ask you to stop. And if you stopped that thing on the bus, they would give you what they call a safety bug, which you cash in down the cafeteria. Starts to do bad things.
In front of the supervisor, so you can... If you want to improve anyone's self-esteem, especially children, put them in a situation with a significant other, some adult that they look up to, put them in a situation where they can relate to an adult, where they can learn something, that they can then master reading, drawing, putting Legos together, riding a bicycle. You ever see the look on a kid's face when they learn how to ride a bicycle for the first time? Oh my gosh, it's priceless. You know? The other thing you can do, and this is what works wonders, is you put someone who has low self-esteem, you put them in a situation where they teach. They teach. I loved working in the schools because there's always usually older or younger kids there. So you can take, you've got someone who's like, you know, a sixth grader who is just, you know, having a hard time, getting in trouble a lot. The whole line, the tough part is convincing the teacher that this sixth grader should be able to go down to the first grader class and work with one or two students and either just read to them or help them to learn something, teach them something. Of course, the teacher said, well, why should he be rewarded? You want him to behave in the classroom more? Look, you know, this is how you improve someone's self-esteem. The pats on the backs are nice. I love yous are nice, but it's not enough. You have to be able to help them get in situations. And then you explain to them, Johnny, you know how you like going down to the first grade classroom and doing that stuff? Do you know why you like it so much? You teach them that what they're doing is helping themselves feel better inside while they're helping someone else. Can't tell you the number of kids that I've had in my therapy sessions that I'm like, you know, sometimes meeting with them in those sessions is not enough. I'm like, okay, I want you to meet me here Saturday morning, 8 o'clock. I'm like, huh? I said, and bring a hammer with you. We're going to go help build a house for Habitat. It's amazing. And it's frequently the new homeowners are there also working on the house. And so I'll get, you know, these teenagers to talk with these new homeowners and how excited they are about owning their first house. And these are people that sometimes come from, you know, these big houses and cars and that kind of stuff, or maybe not so. But to hear someone so excited about owning a house. Ah, yeah. Okay, I want to hand out to you these developmental assets here. You can pass them back there also. I know there are more fruits to what's going on. But the point I want you to kind of take with you is that when you look at behavior in children and what's going on with them, the good and the bad, to look at where has that come from? You know, what is it that's making a difference in that child's life? You know, give me some back here. You know, what is it that's making them act that way or feel that way?
I'm trying to lose it.
There's, as far as the societal roots, as far as what's going on, you don't have as much control over that or the church as you do over your family. Now, you may not come from an ideal family yourself, your own family of origin. And so you look at, okay, well, maybe you didn't learn when you were growing up how to relate as a mother or a father to your kids in a way that was really healthy. You can still learn how to do that. Or maybe you come from a situation that, or you're in a situation now that's not ideal. Maybe you are a single parent and you have to work. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the reality of that. And so what are ways that you can then hook your children up in working with other significant adults in the neighborhood or church that can make a difference for them? How can you do that? And that's how you kind of work then in being able to do that stuff. All right, if we look at this, the first section, the top section, are the external assets. Okay? Stuff from the outside as far as what's going to be helping children. Family support. This idea of unconditional love, I think it's one of the toughest things to get across to kids about, you know, how when you're giving them a hard time or criticizing them, that you can still love them. Or that you can be angry with them and still love them at the same time. Now, it takes repetition of a few thousand times to get that message across to kids. But you have to work at that one. Positive family communication. A couple that was here last week, the Wilhelms that were teaching, you know, Laura's theory on raising kids. She has two teenage boys. One is that you just love them continuously and you talk all the time. And you talk about everything. So that everything becomes talkable. Now, I don't know what kind of families you were raised in, but I came in a family where it's just the opposite. You know, it's like, you know, we're a good German family, you don't talk about those things. And if I look back, the roots where that came from, my mother and father were raised in a family where at the dinner table, children did not speak. You don't do that. You interfere with the meal. So, you look at how you can change those things then. Other adult relationships. It takes more than just parents. So I have families offering their children to me at times, you know, kind of stuff. It's realizing that sometimes parents, you know, need other adults to be able to help you. Those relationships with other adults can be wonderful for your kids. And how do you promote that? And as a parent yourself, do you know kids that need your help sometimes? You know, when I was growing up, I was very fortunate. My next door neighbor, his name was Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams put up so much stuff for me. He was so patient, much more so than with my parents because they had three of us. But, you know, it's like I would go over there, and one day I'd mix in the floor, concrete floor of the garage, like, you know, lime and some cement and some oil and grass seed and all this, and mixing this big goopy mess, as only a little kid could do, which I usually do frequently. But it's like, and Mr. Williams' response to that was to laugh. And he thought it was like, you know, just the idea of creativity and trying and all this kind of stuff. And my mother's was like, oh my God, you know, kind of stuff. You know, and I, fortunately, I had that balance. And then Mr. Williams and I cleaned up the mess. He helped me do that. All right, caring neighborhood. Really important here. Caring school climate. What you can do there. Parent involvement in schooling. Now, how much does that occur in your children's school? And how much are you involved in the school? A community that values youth. Remember yesterday I was saying that I don't think as a society we really value youth that much.
How do you see that?
Well,
the examples did not value.
Okay. How? Everyone help me out?
Parents that don't spend time with their children. Many parent after parent, single parent, whatever, are working or doing something and their kids are doing their own thing.
How many of our kids do their own thing?
All right, let me read some of the stuff here.
As a society, our whole economy is set up to support everything but children. Education is always at the bottom of the list. Mothers who stay at home and take care historically have never been esteemed, only in word, not in action. There's so many ways.
The kids will say, when you ask, does your mother work? No, she just stays
exactly.
home. And the just part paints a whole picture. Right?
Basically, okay, if you want to, like, recently, if I had added a deck to a house, okay? You need a permit to add a deck to a house. All right? You don't need one that'll produce a kid. Child care workers basically have zero to little training at all, yet raise 2/3 of the youth today. Has one of the highest turnover rates as far as jobs go, child care workers and daycare centers. You have to have your car inspected, but not your kids.
You have to have a fishing license, but not a license to be a parent.
Yep. And you have to register if you're an auto mechanic, a doctor, lawyer, nurse, a pest control person, firemen, beauticians, teachers, CPAs, truck drivers, chimney sweeps, insurance agents, interior designers, massage therapists, real estate agents, pets, you have to register pets.
All those laws.
Huh?
Maybe we should get rid of all those laws.
With the registered pets, cars, boats, jet skis, trailers, campers, firearms, even tires on our cars are registered. They have a little number on there. We register to vote, boat, drive, fly, fish, hunt, camp, cut hair, but not to have and raise children. And each of them has rules and regulations and legislation behind all those other things, but not behind kids. There were laws in this country first to protect cruelty to animals, and there weren't cruelty to children.
It's still that way in Oregon. It's still a felony to beat a dog in Oregon, but not beat a child.
Yeah, corporal punishment is pretty much allowed everywhere.
The rule of thumb? Who knows what that means?
I do.
A
it's
stick?
Okay to beat your wife and your children so long as it's no bigger than your thumb.
A stick,
and that's been the law up until about the beginning of this century.
Yeah. That's what I mean by we don't value children.
It's hierarchical. I mean, you know, we have all of these rights for certain people, and the last people, it seems, in our society that we have any kind of rights are children.
And maybe you didn't say it directly, but all of those occupations require training to different levels. And how much training do parents get?
How much training do parents have to have?
Well, unfortunately, the only test you take to be a parent, once you take that test and it's positive, it's too late to go back.
That's right.
That's the only test you gotta take.
Yeah. So that's what I mean as far as us not valuing children. They're expendable. We sell them for money, for sex, we abuse them. You know, it's just, there's just so many ways. Now, I mean, as a society, are we doing better? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the direction that I see things going as far as, the fruits that we have is and what we've been kind of growing this children, this tree we've got going here, is that yes, significantly there are improvements. No question at all. Now, is there a ways to go? Oh yeah, there definitely is. When I saw this list, you know, and we're not gonna have time to get through all of this, but please, put this up places, bring it places, duplicate it kind of stuff. The idea is to get the word out that this is what children need. All right? We kind of go through here, where were we? Communication, youth as resources, service to others. It's important, that kind of stuff, that kids learn to value that. Safety, an issue there is their home by themselves with guns, family boundaries, school boundaries, neighborhood boundaries, adult role models, positive peer influence, high expectations, but not unrealistic ones. And that they're different for your different kids. Creative activities, youth programs, religious community, time at home. Time to just hang out at home with their parents. Okay, now, the internalized stuff. This is what they found in kids that have grown up to be really, very, I can say good kids, but not that.
Healthy.
Well-balanced.
Well-balanced, thank you. Achievement, motivated, school engagement, homework, bonding to school, reading for pleasure, caring. Oh, the reading one. Had a parent come in, she was so tired of her son always reading those Goosebump books. And isn't there anything else? Shouldn't he read some of the classics and all this kind of stuff? And I'm like, shut up, your son is reading. And she's like, really? I was like, uh-huh. Leave him alone. Buy him some more books. Caring. Equality and social justice. Okay, that would not have been on this list 20 years ago, I don't think. Integrity, honesty, responsibility, restraint, planning, decision making, interpersonal competence, cultural competence, resistance skills, peaceful conflict resolution, personal power, self-esteem. Look how far down self-esteem is. We talk about how important that is. Look how far down the list it is. Sense of purpose, positive view of personal future. Every young child that you come in contact with, you should always ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you should ask them every week. The idea is getting them to think, what do I want to do? What do I like doing? Oh, this week I'm going to be a fireman. Man, I'm so excited to do that. Next week, I want to be a beautician. No, I want to do that instead. We got to that. No, I want to build houses. Wonderful. Because what you're doing is you're getting that mind going and thinking. Always ask kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? It's a wonderful gift to give kids. Okay. Remember, you got to share these things. I should do garbage. I did garbo this morning. I want to check the garbage. I don't find any of these in the garbage. Recycling. Thank you for your attention. And hope you have a good rest of the day. Sorry, but it's going to be sunny out and warm. But if you wait a little while, maybe it'll rain. All right, we're going to have a good afternoon.
Thank you.